Are you ready to wow your friends with trivia tidbits about your favourite books and authors? Join me, Jess.
And me, Rachel.
On our new Book Trivia Podcast.
Each episode, we kick off with some fun book trivia, then dive into our featured read with plenty of juicy behind-the-scenes insights.
If you love books, authors, and a side of silliness, then why not give us a listen?
Find us at booktriviapodcast.com or on Reddit, Instagram, and Substack, where we are Book Trivia Podcast.
You think you know what we're going to talk about.
And welcome back to Three Fates Decide.
It just sounds more dramatic that way.
All right. So this week we are going to be talking about...
But just when you least expect it, we changed the game.
One Will Smith slapped Chris Rock.
I mean, we always celebrated Easter.
Harry Potter the Half-Blood Prince.
So we're going to do another free talk, freestyle thing. No planned discussion.
At the end of the day, only one thing matters. We decide.
We're going to hit the main highlights.
That is the thing, like what we were saying back in that episode.
A quick recap.
Three Fates Decide podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Three Fates Decide. My name is Sam, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Liz and Mary. Say hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
And for our first episode back, after our little hiatus there, we are going to talk about something that just happened this past weekend, but by the time you listen to this, it'll be about a month since. But that is the coronation of King Charles III, who is the King of England, or the King of England, the Commonwealth, about a bajillion places. So there you go.
Yes.
So this was a historic moment because most people in the world have not seen coronation because his mother was the longest reigning British monarch, as she was coronated 70 years ago in 63. I'm sorry, 53. So now he was coronated in 23. So he is the 40th reigning monarch to be crowned since 1066. A little fun fact for you. So we're just going to kind of go over some quick things about the actual ceremony, who was there, some of the drama surrounding people's feelings on the subject, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's been mixed reviews. And So I am one of those crazy people. So I have mentioned I live in New Jersey in the U.S. And I had to wake up at 5 a.m. in order to watch this. And at 5 was when he was just getting into the Diamond Jubilee Stagecoach. So normally they take the golden coach that he rode on the way back, that everyone and their mom has said it's like uber uncomfortable, the Golden State Coach. So he took his mom's Diamond Jubilee State Coach there so he could be a little bit more comfortable. And basically the route from Buckingham Palace is they go down the mall, is how we say it, but they say it differently with their accent. Say like the mail or something, but I'm saying the mall, sorry. To the Admiralty Arch, and then make a right, go down Whitehall, past Downing Street and all that, and then Westminster Abbey is right there. So one fun fact is a lot of people were talking about how the Waleses, so his son and daughter-in-law, the Prince and Princess of Wales, everyone was saying that they were late because they were technically supposed to be in before Charles and Camilla showed up, but they actually walked in behind them. And it turned out that they weren't late. Charles and Camilla got there early. They left on time because everything was timed to the minute for this whole thing. So they left Buckingham Palace on time, but those horses obviously did not want to do this and like booked it to Westminster Abbey to the point that they got there like 15 minutes early. And
this person's like, we're not standing around for this shit. We're going.
Well, it was raining. It was cold. They didn't want to do it.
Exactly. They're like, we don't want to stand here and wait. We're just going to, we're going.
Well, so one thing that they did was they lined the streets with about 4,000 invited guests from like armed forces, veterans, the NHS, social care staff, and then like all along the route, civilian services, a lot of his charities, like that he invited everybody that had ever served in the country, basically having representatives along the way so that they were part of like the ceremony, which I thought was very nice. I mean, it sucked that it was cold and rainy and they had to stand outside, but it was very nice to be included, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I wouldn't have turned down an invitation even if it was cold and raining.
Absolutely. That's something you don't want to miss.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get to Williams.
Yeah. You know, Actually, during the procession to Westminster Abbey, I thought it was really interesting. So I actually watched the NBC coverage because my family is primarily an NBC family here in the U.S. So I thought it was kind of interesting. Like they did have a historian, of course, as one of the commentators, and he mentioned that, of course, you know, as long as, you know, now this route is, of course, like not uber short, but it's not actually that long either. I think they said it's about a mile and a half, which, let's be honest, is not that terrible. I mean, most people, you know, that are decent walkers could walk that, you know. It's not like you're doing a marathon or anything.
Right.
But what was interesting was, like, he pointed out that, well, okay, a lot of the things that we saw, you know, during the whole coronation process actually originated with William the Conqueror. So this has been going on for like, you know, like just under 1,000 years now. And at the time, of course, there was no Buckingham Palace. This was from the Tower of London. And as the actual procession would go through a whole different, you know, different sections of the city of London. And it was because, which, you know, given the context, is it's William the Conqueror, it makes sense, is that it's supposed to be an act of public acknowledgement and legitimacy that this man that you're watching, you know, parading through the street on the way to the coronation ceremony is your king. And it's not some other guy kind of a thing.
Right, and
the whole procession out in the street and the parading and everything is meant to give the people, the public, the chance to see their sovereign and acknowledge him as such. So, and of course the Tower of London is much further away than Buckingham Palace. So if Charles had to go from the Tower of London there, it would probably be more like 5 miles versus 1.5. So,
right. And well, and now thankfully, you know, everyone has TV, so they don't need to go outside and see in person.
Yeah. Not unless they're like Uber into this.
Right. Which again, I'd probably be there if I had a chance. I'm not going to lie.
Same. I mean, I may not give two rat's butts about the monarchy and England because in the UK because it's not my country. So right. I mean, while I acknowledge it exists, I acknowledge that they're quote unquote the head of the country, but it's more of a figurehead, it's just a title. It's not real. There's no real responsibilities that come with it, I suppose. But I still, if I got invited to it, I'd be there.
It's like it's history, you know, like that's how I feel.
I'm not stupid. I may not like them, but it doesn't mean I'm stupid.
Yeah.
But so there was more than 2,200 people from 203 countries that were in Westminster Abbey for this thing. And we'll kind of go through some of the different people because there was it was a nice mix from there. But, you know, one thing that I loved was that Prince George, so William and Kate's oldest son, Prince George, who's third in line to the throne.
Oh, he's second now.
Second.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
See, I'm telling you, I apologize. Second in line to the throne. Queen Elizabeth's gone. We're still sad about this.
Yeah.
But he was a page boy and got to hold his grandfather's robe.
Robe, cloak, whatever.
A really heavy, heavy velvet thing that dragged behind him. That he needed four page boys to carry it.
Yes.
And then Camilla's was actually her grandchildren that did hers.
Yeah, I remember reading that three of them were her grandsons, and then the fourth kid is like some great nephew of hers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it became a family thing. Actually, I remember I was reading, I want to say it's Vanity Fair or Harper's Bazaar, one of them. Actually had an article where they explained who all the kids were, who all eight boys were. And I mean, they don't like put like, you know, picture to name or anything, but that's how they explained it. So for Charles, obviously we know George, we should, you know, for any royal watchers, you should kind of recognize what this kid looks like by now. But,
right.
One of the other boys is actually one of Charles's godsons, apparently.
Yes, I believe I did hear that, yeah.
Yeah, and then another kid, his father is actually one of those lords that works under Charles in some capacity. I don't remember the exact title, like his job role with Charles, but it's like one of those, like, I guess it's like one of those traditional positions that you would serve for the king or the queen, whatever. And then the fourth boy is actually a distant cousin of theirs, somewhere in the family. So yeah.
Sure.
They
definitely kept it very close. Like Camilla's ladies and waiting, or I don't know what they call them now, were her sisters. At least one was her sister. I don't know if both of them were, but it's so funny because when I was talking to our friend who lives in the UK, I said, I was like, wow, it's pretty funny that like her ladies look just like her. Yeah, they're related to her. Like, now it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it makes sense.
I think that's very nice though, that they kept it very family oriented like that. I thought that was very nice.
Right.
The ceremony had a lot of music.
Yep.
By Andrew Lloyd Webber, who, wrote Phantom of the Opera, Cats, you know, the Andrew Lloyd Webber. I actually really enjoyed his song. You know, there's a lot of different stages of the coronation. The first part's called the recognition, where he is presented to the people and he proclaims, you know, himself. And he did it in all four different directions. I believe that's the part.
Yeah.
And they shouted, God save the king. And the trumpets would sound after each one. And then the only part... Then stage two is the oath, where he gave two oaths. So there was the accession declaration oath that stated that he was a faithful Protestant, and then obviously his oath to be king, the coronation oath, which is a legal requirement. And he signed the oaths. And
yeah,
a third stage, which is the one part that no one can see. So they brought these screens out so that no one could see, is the anointing. It's a very spiritual thing. It's you know, special oil, and it's only between the Archbishop of Canterbury and the king, or whoever is being crowned. So obviously no one saw that. But that's stage three. And then stage four is the investiture, and that's when he gets crowned. And it's the only time in his life that he's going to wear this crown, and it's St. Edward's crown, which apparently is extremely heavy.
Yeah, they said it's like about 5 pounds. 5 pounds.
I love listening to Queen Elizabeth talk about it. She hated that crown. But again, she only wore it once. You only wear it this one time. After that, they just put it back in the vault.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really funny. The commentary was mentioning how in like some past interview that Charles gave, he actually shared some memories he had about, you know, around the time his mother was coronated. And he apparently said he remembered that he would see her practicing wearing the crown up and down the hallways, and she would even wear old curtains as like a replica robe,
like the robe
ape. Yeah. To get used to how to wear these things.
That's
for
smart.
Hours on end.
You think about it, they wear it all day.
Yeah.
Or at least for a long time.
Right. So apparently he does have memories of her like walking up and down, you know, the hallways of Buckingham Palace wearing, you know, like looking completely ridiculous like this, like a crown and like, you know, some old curtains.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. But to be fair, he was four at the four at the time. So that's actually a pretty good memory to even have.
Yeah, I believe he said he didn't really remember the actual coronation. He was there, though.
Yeah.
Princess Anne was not. She was too young. She was only like 2.
Right.
So after he's decked out in this like gold coat and given the orb and the ring and the scepter and all that stuff, they put the St. Edward's crown on him. And, you know, the bells ring for 2 minutes, the trumpets sound, the gun salutes, and, you know, it's official. The king is there. Page 5 is the enthronement, where he's moved to his throne chair. And this is where the Prince of Wales... Well, so they said traditionally a succession of royals and peers pay homage. But in this case, they only did the Prince of Wales. He really kind of cut down everything. Again, so that the ceremony didn't take 5 hours. His mother's coronation was 5 hours long. This was only 2 hours long. So, you know.
Right.
but it was still long.
Yes.
But
instead of inviting a lot of people up, they asked people listening at home to pledge allegiance to His Majesty. And they asked, the words were, "I swear that I will pay true allegiance to Your Majesty and to your heirs and successors according to law, so help me God." And William was the first one to do it, and he gave his dad a nice kiss on the cheek. It was very nice. Nice little moment.
Yeah. I was like, I kind of remember, like, you know, when I was watching with my parents, like, about this part, I kind of pointed out to them that, like, you know, it may look kind of silly, and it may sound kind of silly in modern times, but I did point out how, you know, 500, 600 years ago, this whole section where you have to pay homage to the king, it was like very serious business.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like you're doing it and you're doing this in front of hundreds of your peers, and you swore in front of all these people that you will, that, you know, you're basically swearing allegiance to this guy, that this guy is your king. You swore allegiance to him. You said all these vows, and then so now you can't go around plotting things against him.
Right.
Because the moment they find out you were doing something behind his back, plotting against him, off with your head, basically. Yeah. So, yeah, it was very serious business. So.
Yeah, now they're just like, when you're home, just say, you know, I pledge allegiance to the king. We pledge allegiance to the flag. They pledge allegiance to their king. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next was the crowning of the queen, which we all, I feel like, feel the same way, but Camilla is the queen consort, but they just call her Queen Camilla. She was crowned and enthroned, but she didn't have to take an oath because it's by proxy, basically. So like, if anything is to happen to Charles, she will, you know, will still always be called Queen Camilla, but she will no longer be queen. Kate would then become queen consort, and William would become king. So she gets nada, but she wore Queen Mary's crown,
which is pretty surprising they did that.
Yeah.
because for people who have listened to our earlier episode, a few episodes back, episode 83, which was our British royal family scandals. Yeah, the Queen Mary we're referring to is Charles's great-grandmother, Queen Mary, formerly Mary of Teck, wife of King George V. Yeah, we know how she feels about certain members of the family that were scandalous.
Yes, she was. She disowned her son. Let's just put it out there. She disowned her own son.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know.
And now
she is rolling in her grave right now over the fact that Camilla was crowned with her crown. She is rolling in her grave. Let's just be honest.
She's a very outspoken woman. No punches were ever pulled. And, you know, but she was all about, you know, tradition and making sure that the monarchy was always in good standing and stuff like that.
I would have been curious if, like, what she would have thought about Charles and Diana if they hadn't gotten divorced. That's what I would wonder. Because on the one hand, okay, hypothetically, if they had never gotten divorced and they tried to make this work somehow, would she still have disapproved of it or not? That's that what if question. Because obviously she passed away long before this ever happened. But,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, I think if Charles hadn't cheated on Diana, I think it would have been better. Obviously.
Right.
You know, I think that was it. And I think it was not so much the fact that he cheated that upset Diana so much, is that he flaunted it in her face. Right. You know?
Well, yeah, he wore the cufflinks that Camilla got him on their wedding day.
Yeah. So, I mean, he flaunted the fact that he didn't love Diana.
I think he was in love with Camilla. I do think he loved Diana. There was definitely a love there. It just wasn't like Camilla was the love of his life, the love of his life, you know?
Yeah.
And it stinks because of the royal family. He wasn't allowed to be with the love of his life.
Yeah.
But it just caused so much chaos.
Yeah, I think that was more I think the fact of, maybe if Charles had been more discreet about his affair with Camilla, and maybe it wouldn't have been quite as devastating for Diana.
Yeah.
You know, and the media backlash that she got, and the royal backlash that she got. But I mean, she was like you said, Sam, she was a master at playing the media.
Oh, yeah.
She was. And I mean, she had to be, which was sad. She had to be that master of playing the media. But
Diana, as amazing a woman as she was, and she was, she did a lot.
She was still flawed.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
She was not the perfect person everyone thought she was. She had her own demons, obviously had a lot of mental health issues that were not taken care of. But she used the media to her advantage and made sure she came out looking better than she probably should have. But yeah, honestly, it was both of them. Let's just be honest. It was both sides. Diana and Charles, neither of them did right. And they shouldn't have gotten married. But it was too late. You think about it, she would still be alive if they hadn't divorced, most likely, unless obviously something else tragic would have happened. But so she would have been crowned. That would have been a sight to see.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I think she still had some star power to her that might have made people tolerate the monarchy.
Yes, I
agree. A lot more.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Because there's always going to be that segment that, you know, wishes it was like fully republic/democratic, you know, mm-hmm. but I think popular opinion probably would have been a higher percentage of supportive of the monarchy, like the way it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago, even.
And I do think William and Kate may bring it back a little bit. Not that much. Like, I don't think that it's going to do a whole 180, but I think more the public opinion will improve with William and Kate because they are very highly respected mm-hmm. in like the UK and the Commonwealth and all that. I mean, Kate looked gorgeous. She's very regal, and just, I mean, she's going to make such a beautiful queen when that happens. And
yeah, but I did like her slight snub on Camilla, because technically she wasn't supposed to wear a tiara, but you cannot tell me that that floral headdress she was wearing was not as close to a tiara as she could get without it actually being a freaking tiara.
Wait, and then Charlotte had a matching one.
I know, Charlotte looked absolutely adorable, and Kate looked absolutely beautiful in it. But I'm just like, that was basically as big of a middle finger as she could give without giving a middle finger. And I loved it. And I loved it. I'm sorry. I did. That was great.
So after she's crowned, then they take communion. And then when they leave their thrones and enter St. Edward's Chapel, which is behind the altar, Charles removed St. Edward's crown and put on the imperial state crown, and then joined the procession to leave the abbey at the national anthem. And the imperial crown is lighter. It is 2.3 pounds as opposed to the 5-pounder that he was wearing. So that's good. At least he had a lighter one on the way out. And then, like I mentioned, on the way out, they went into the gold state coach, which was built in 1762 and has been used at every coronation since 1831. There you go.
Wow.
And according to everyone who's ridden in it, is just completely unbearable.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting. Some of these like various items involved in the coronation, they're like very old, very, very old.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, really, from a historical perspective.
Yeah. So, and then they took the procession back to Buckingham Palace. He went into the back and was presented to the troops. They all did a hip hip hooray 3 times. And then they did the Buckingham Palace flypast, which is about a 6-minute thing with all the different planes from the military shooting off. You know, they shoot the red, white, and blue. And you have the whole royal family on the balcony. And they did do it a little differently, where they kept the families on the outside and just Charles and Camilla were center, which people thought was a little weird. But someone, I don't remember on what channel, because I watched it on Sky TV, which is a British channel, but I watched it on YouTube. And someone had said, like, if you think about it, and I know a lot of people are going to say, well, he's just being a baby or whatever, but like, his whole life, Charles was overshadowed by his mother, and then he was overshadowed by his wife, and then he was overshadowed by his children. This is really the first time that he got to be number one. This was his day. This was all about him. He was like, I'm going to be in the middle and you all can be on the outside. I kind of don't blame him. I really don't. I'd be like that too.
I mean, to be fair, it really is his day. I mean, he's the one who's being crowned king officially.
Like, it's not even about her. It's all about him. She was just a secondary thing, but whatever. So yeah, so that was the coronation. And we can go over a couple of people that were at the coronation. Obviously, the royal family, Princess Anne and her husband, Prince Edward, Prince Andrew, Princess Beatrice and her husband, Princess Eugenie and her husband, Prince Harry was there, mm-hmm. a bunch of other prince and princess. Everyone, the royal family was there. I'm just going to throw it out there.
Right.
And
even some of their cousins.
Yeah, cousins. A lot of Queen Elizabeth's cousins were there. and stuff like that, which, again, awesome family affair, you know. And then a lot of foreign royals. So you have Prince and Princess of Monaco, the Crown Prince and Princess of Japan, the Crown Prince and Princess of Denmark, the King and Crown Princess of Sweden, King and Queen of Spain, Crown Prince and Princess of Norway, the Grand Duke and Grand Duchess of Luxembourg, the Queen and Crown Prince of Greece, King and Queen of the Netherlands, the King of New Zealand, the King and Queen of Belgium, the King and Queen of Bhutan, the King and Queen of Thailand, King and Queen of Tonga, the Royals of Ghana, King and Queen of Jordan, the Royals of Malaysia, Prince and Princess of Liechtenstein, the King of Bahrain, Prince of Kuwait, King of Aswanti, King of Lesotho, Prince of Saudi Arabia, Royal of the United Arab Emirati, Royals of Qatar, Royals of Oman, Royals of Brunei, Princess of Morocco. My goodness.
Ow. I'm actually surprised there's still a Crown Prince of Greece at this point.
Yeah, a queen.
Because I thought...
There's a queen of Greece and her husband.
I didn't even think those titles still existed anymore. Or
me, you know, I'm telling you, when I'm going through, I was like, I didn't realize how many countries still had monarchies.
Or at least they're like ceremonial anyway.
Yeah.
Acknowledged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like I know that like Prince Philip had to give up his
his
titles
of
Greece and Denmark to become a British citizen, and therefore he could marry. Well, no, actually, he could still marry. I think he could still marry Queen Elizabeth at the time, but he still had to like give it up, I guess, to be considered a British subject or something.
Yeah,
maybe. Or I misremembered that. So that's why, like, I was, but, you know, I didn't realize they still acknowledged a royal family in Greece. I mean, obviously, they're not actually ruling anything, but, you know.
Obviously, Camilla's family. Oh, and then obviously with the U.S., you had the First Lady and her granddaughter. So Dr. Biden and their granddaughter came, which so cool for their granddaughter. She got to go.
Right.
But yeah, so Camilla's family was there, her children, her nieces and nephews, and as weird as it sounds, her ex-husband was also there.
Hmm.
So that had to be a little weird.
Yeah.
The Princess of Wales, Kate, her family was there, her brother, sister, parents. So they were all there. Obviously, all the UK leaders and the prime minister and all. There's just way too many people to go through for the British government. British nobility, obviously, there was a bunch of people there. Obviously, various heads of state, the president of France, prime minister of Canada, governor general of Canada, president of Poland. As I mentioned, our first lady, Jill Biden, prime minister of Australia. Prime Minister of New Zealand, and then their governor generals, Prime Minister of Pakistan, President of Germany, President of Italy, Vice President of India, Vice President of China, President of Ireland, President and First Lady of the Philippines, President and First Lady of Paraguay, of the European Union Commission, Union Council President, European Parliament, United Nations, Ministers of Bosnia and Herzegovina. I'm so sorry if that was wrong.
It's about right.
Right? Trying to sound it out. Prime Minister of Bangladesh, President of Cyprus, President of Sri Lanka, President of Senegal, Belize, the Bahamas, Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands, Vietnam, Zimbabwe, Czech Republic, Brazil, Austria, Andorra, and Nepal. Wow. Not all of them were presidents. Some of them sent, like with Joe Biden didn't go, he sent his wife. They brought, you know, they sent a representative. Not all of them were presidents, but those are all the countries that were represented.
Right.
Obviously various. Oh, the other thing that I liked, he had so many different religious representatives there. He had a rabbi, he had a Buddhist, I think every single religion was accounted for. You know, Sikhism, Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism, Judaism, all there, because he believes in religious freedom. I thought that was fantastic.
Right.
And then obviously there was celebrities. I don't really know many of these people except for Lionel Richie and Katy Perry that was there. I know Maggie Smith was there. The dames were there. So Maggie Smith, Judi Dench. Dame Emma Thompson.
One of the women my daughter is named after.
Was also there. Is that who she was named after?
Partly.
Oh, cool. But yeah, so he had members of his different charities there and all that stuff. So that was the bulk of the people that were there. So, you know, there's a lot of people. A lot of different countries represented, and, you know, sounds like a blast. But as many people were celebrating, there was also mixed feelings on the subject. And I know we kind of talked about this a little bit before we got on. But yeah, there was protesters there. And the protesters were mostly for, you know, Republicans who want to abolish the monarchy, which, you know, I get it. You know, at this point, they're ahead of, you know, they're the head of state. They can't really be political on anything, but like, how much power do they actually have? And, you know, they get all this money from the people, and, you know, it's, I get it. I do. I understand. Do I think the monarchy is going to be abolished? No, not, at least not maybe in our lifetime.
Yeah. Because like, our friend from the UK that we chit chat with, she basically confirmed a question I had asked, which was like, isn't it like something that Parliament or some kind of like legal thing had to happen before the monarchy can really be abolished? And she was like, yeah, basically. So it's like, unless there's like somebody in Parliament who has the audacity to actually suggest such a proposal, and then they somehow get a bunch of other MPs to agree to that proposal, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon either. Yeah.
Again, I understand why people don't want to or don't want it anymore. I do. I get it. But I just don't see it happening, as sad as that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't see, yeah, like, you know, as of right now anyway, it just doesn't seem like there's anybody in Parliament who has the guts to actually suggest such a thing. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I mean, if nobody has, you know, if not even a single person has the nerve to even throw the idea even out there, then there's definitely no way this is ever going to happen.
Right. And then I think really the only other people that had anything negative to say about just it in general are the pro Harry and Meghan people that I feel like are mostly Americans.
I think that's, yeah. I just think it's really funny that there are actually some Americans that are still, you know, siding with them.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, I'm telling you, I saw so many people, he's our king. He's, you know, he's American. He's, you know, he's such a good guy. You know, why would you want to stay there? Why would you want to, I'm so happy he left that toxicity. But he was just as toxic, you know, like, I'm not saying that the royal family
still just as toxic,
but it's not like you know what, like the royal family could have very well have leaked stuff, but he did the same thing. He did the same thing. And again, my biggest thing is that him and Meghan left the royal family, which I have no problem with. And honestly, I don't think they would have had a problem with it. You know, if he had gone to the queen and said, listen, you know, we don't want to be working royals anymore, even though they went there and said, we only want to be part-time, you know, where they still wanted the money, but they didn't want to do all the work. And the queen was like, ah, no. But, you know, whatever. They decided to walk away from the working royal life. I don't think that would have been an issue. What happened is you left and then attacked to the fullest extent. And we want privacy, but I'm going to put out a Netflix documentary and I'm going to put out a book that is all your side. You know, the family can't respond. They can't. And so everyone's taking their word as whatever. We did an episode on them. I don't want to waste too much time on it, but I was happy that he went, and supported his father. And it was weird because he apparently flew in on, he left LA on Thursday night, got in on Friday, spent Friday at his cottage that he's going to be losing, basically, in England. And went to the coronation on Saturday, literally left from Westminster Abbey, went back to the airport and flew home. So he didn't talk to anybody, as far as I know. He, except for his cousins or whatever at the ceremony. But as far as I know, he didn't speak to his brother. He didn't speak to his father. Maybe they did. But as far as I've heard, they did not. But the one thing I did hear was that Charles did mention that he was very happy that both of his sons were going to be there. And he seemed like he was in good spirits. Yeah. So I was happy about that. That was good on his part that he did that. So
yeah,
I'll give you some kudos, Harry. I will give you some kudos for that. But that's it. You're done now. Yep. And then I think the only other negative thing, like I said, was people were kind of upset that, even though he did cut down a lot with the coronation, it still costs over £100 million. And England right now is in a crisis, a financial crisis, along obviously with the rest of the world, but they call it the living wage crisis. So there's people who are literally suffering from, because they can't support themselves, their families, whatever. And here comes the royal family in their expensive clothing and their diamonds and gold, state coaches and, with all of the police and just everything and just all the money that got put into this. And it all came from tax dollars. And that money probably could have been put to better use. But what are you going to do?
Right. I mean, on top of that, the thing is that you can't completely blame the monarchy for that, because from what I recalled, technically Parliament had a lot of involvement in the coronation ceremony, if I remember correctly, because I believe this came up around the time, obviously, when, the Queen passed away, it did come up. Because it's obviously Charles is now technically the king, even though he didn't go through the actual ceremony yet, but he was technically the king. And then eventually the question came up, when is the coronation going to happen? And, amongst the discussion, it did come up, from what I can recall, that it's technically Parliament is a big part of organizing this whole thing. So it's I get you can complain about, the royal family spending all this money, but it's what about Parliament here?
Right.
Right.
But, unfortunately, being the face of the country comes with getting the backlash of the country, I think. So
it is.
Because it's so funny, because
it is.
So many people he's the king. Doesn't mean he can just do whatever the heck he wants. He still has to answer to Parliament. At the end of the day, Parliament still makes the rules.
Yeah, I mean, there's the Magna Carta, and then there was that temporary revolution without a monarchy for a few years. With a certain Mr. Oliver Cromwell. that kind of put a stopper on that absolute monarchy business.
Yeah. Yep. So, oh yeah. But other than that, I thought it was a nice ceremony. Again, not that I've ever seen a coronation, so it seemed fine. I thought it must have been a hard day for Charles, because again, as even though it's a day that he's been working towards his entire life, it's just another reminder, like, his mom's gone, you know, and as
bittersweet.
Yeah, very bittersweet. I'm sure it was, he looked emotional at times. He really did. He looked emotional at times. I think people considered it like grumpy or straight faced. I thought it was almost emotional.
Yeah. I think he was hoping, as much as he knows it was not possible, but for something like that, he wanted his mom there.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what, that was still his mother.
Absolutely.
You know, just like no matter what happens with him and William and Harry, Harry is still his son. That is still Harry's dad. Yeah. Whether they ever speak again or not, that has no bearing on anything. That is still the man that is half of him. That is half of Harry.
Yep.
You know?
Agreed.
I think people have forget things like that.
Yeah.
That even if you are fighting with family members, or you don't particularly like a family member anymore, they're still family. Right. There's still a love there that never really goes away.
Yeah.
It's always there. It may be a very, very small part, but it's there. Mm-hmm. And then if something would happen, it's painful. I don't care what you say. I don't care what people say. It's painful.
Yeah.
And it is okay to grieve someone that you don't like.
Of course. Of course.
I think people forget that. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Not that we're talking about them grieving or anything. I mean, they are grieving for the queen, but
right.
At the same time,
no, right.
You know,
but it's not, it's
Charles
not
all, will pass someday.
It's not all cut and dry.
Exactly. It's not black and white. The world is in shades of gray.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. So.
And not 50 shades of gray.
No, no. Oh, no. Mm-mm.
Sorry. Sorry.
British version, no. Royal version.
Oh dear God, let's not get into that.
Next coronation will be William's, and I wonder if he thought about that. You know, like next time he does this, it'll be him. But at the same time, like that's sad because that means his dad's gone. Like,
yeah.
We'll probably see it in our lifetime, so most likely.
Most likely, yeah.
God willing.
We'll be old. Well, I'll be old.
Yeah. Charles has longevity on both sides, so.
Yeah. So I fully expect I'll probably be in my 60s or 70s when it happens.
Isn't that crazy to think about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think it's going to get really interesting, though, at some point when, you know, William ends up becoming king. The amount of title shuffling that's going to happen is just wild to think about. Because you imagine by that point, chances are Andrew will probably be gone too. So the Duke of York title is going to be open. And chances are that's probably going to be little Louis.
Mm. Oh, he was so cute.
And same thing with... And same thing with like with Princess Royal, which is Anne's title. That's probably going to go to Charlotte. Right. So, yeah, that title shuffling is going to be wild.
We'll get to see all the cards get reshuffled in the deck. All right, thank you guys so much for listening to our episode about the coronation. Let us know in comments on social media or through email what you thought, and join us for next week's episode where I will be reviewing the new live action Little Mermaid movie. And to preface, spoiler alert, see you next week. Did you like what you heard on our episode today? Well, then feel free to come back and listen to us again. You can find us on all different streaming sites, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, iHeartRadio, Spotify, you name it, we're there. And if you really like us, feel free to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Three Fates Decide. That's THREE Fates Decide. You can also email us at threefatesdecide@gmail.com and check out our website at threefatesdecide.com to find other episodes, information about your three hosts, and all of our other links. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Three Fates Decide.
Are you ready to wow your friends with trivia tidbits about your favorite books and authors? Join me, Jess.
And me, Rachel.
On our new book trivia podcast.
Each episode, we kick off with some fun book trivia, then dive into our featured read with plenty of juicy behind-the-scenes insights.
If you love books, authors, and a side of silliness, then why not give us a listen?
Find us at booktriviapodcast.com or on Reddit, Instagram, and Substack, where we are Book Trivia Podcast.